Blog Talk Radio.
December the 15th, and that week went very fast. It's 10 more days to Christmas. That's how fast it went. So I'm glad that you're joining us tonight. I see that my guest is on hold, and we'll get to him momentarily. I want to let you know that we have two great guests tonight. For the first half hour, we have one guest, and then the second half hour, we have another guest. So please stay with us. Notify your friends. This is a show that you don't want to miss. Let them know to come in and listen to what we're having to talk about tonight. It's very important for the whole United States to hear what we have to say tonight. The number to call in case you have any questions or comments is 347-205-9620. And before we get started, I just want to let you know that tomorrow, which is Tuesday, December the 16th, I'm going to be making a television appearance on The Rick Amato Show, and that's on One America News Network. And you can find their website at OANN.com, and that will give you a listing of all the shows and what time they're going to be aired and on what cable stations that you'll be able to see the show. So I hope you will be able to tune in and let people know. It's a very important conservative talk show, so hope you'll join me. Now, let's get to my first guest. We are honored to have with us tonight retired California State Assemblyman Tim Donnelly. And he is, just to give you a little bit of a background on him before I bring you on, he is a Republican that was elected to the California State Assembly in 2010, and I believe at first for the 59th District, and then again he ran and was elected in 2012 for the 33rd District. And he recently fought to run against and become the governor of California to replace Jerry Moonbeam Brown. But that unfortunately didn't occur, and he lost to Neil Kashkari in the primary. And he's originally from Georgia, so he's a southerner like myself. And so without further ado, I want to bring on Mr. Tim Donnelly. Hi, Tim. How are you?
Hi, Susan. I'm doing great. How about you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. I really appreciate your time, and I'm glad that we're going to have you for at least a half hour.
My pleasure.
Great. I wanted to talk to you about, you know, a whole bunch of things, a whole bunch of questions that I have, but I want to sort of lay the groundwork and let people know a little bit about you. I know in 2005 you were involved in the Minuteman movement and actually founded the Minuteman Party in California. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. In 2004, I began reading stories in my local newspaper that were just shocking to me. And so I began researching the topic. And the more I dug into it, the more I discovered that both parties were complicit in encouraging more and more illegal immigration, just like what we're seeing today. We're literally watching the exact same policies that deeply disturbed me then playing out now in sort of a final death rattle where the Republicans are finally revealing what they truly believe, which is they want to have indentured servants. They want to have cheap labor that undercuts, the American workforce so they can make more and more profits.
And we used to think, you know, that was something that was just, it's just in California. You know, California, they do things like that. We don't have to worry about that in the rest of the country. But as we're seeing with Obama's sweeping amnesty bill, if you will, which, by the way, he didn't sign the executive order, but he has essentially caused it to be sweeping amnesty without the order because he won't allow the deportation of the illegal immigrants. But
well,
it's not just a California issue.
Can you imagine if the president of the United States said we're no longer going to enforce any of our environmental laws or any of our gun laws that are, you know, federal in nature, and we're simply going to nullify enforcement? I've decided to protect a certain select population of individuals who are flouting and violating the law. The press would go nuts if it was about guns or environmental law. But when it's about immigration, they're the biggest cheerleaders. And it's really sad because, one of the things I learned as the leader of the Minutemen and living on the border for 30 days was the carnage and the casualties of this, I don't even know what to call it anymore, it's really a great evil. But you have women that are routinely raped when they're brought across here. You have people who are made into indentured servants or modern-day slaves who somebody else pays their contract. They're brought over here. Many of them are abused in the process, and then they wind up being ripped off continually by everybody that they deal with, most of whom are people just like themselves, who came over here illegally and who are now preying on the next wave of people to come here. And it's just a vicious, vicious cycle. And we're not doing anything about that. And we're not even talking about it.
No, we're not even talking about it. And it's interesting because, in California, it seems like now, like Governor Brown, he's all for the amnesty bill that Obama has. And this is the same person who, I don't know if you remember, but back during when we were bringing people over from Vietnam, he was adamantly against having people come here.
Well, that's because back then you couldn't, because you had to be pro-American.
Mm-hmm.
And now you don't.
Right.
And it's as simple as that. And when you look at the groups of people that are hurt by illegal immigration, most of them are poor, and most of them are minorities, and they're low-skilled workers, American workers, who wind up being undercut. They don't have a union. They don't have somebody fighting for them. They don't have a lobbyist in Sacramento or Washington, and so they're the ones who get run over by these policies, and the Democrats are the ones who are doing it to them. But the Democrats tell them, hey, the Republicans hate you. And it works every time. It's kind of like every time Charlie Brown gets up there to kick the football. And, you know, of course it's going to get pulled away every single solitary time, and he's going to fall on his back. And that's the American voter who has been voting against his own interest, because he's being lied to continually by the media, who literally intentionally spreads untruths on certain topics because they have a narrative, and that narrative is part of how they sell soap.
Right. Now, were you on the border? You said, did you say for 30 days you were on the border as the Minuteman Party? Or
yes, I was the leader of the group that I formed in California. It was the largest one in California. And I lived there for 30 days in October, starting on October 1st through October 30th. And I led this group. And, you know, our entire mission was to expose to the media and to the public what was really going on. And we discovered that if you give the media an opportunity, you know, you've got to create a graphic for them. You've got to create some sort of an event. And, of course, you know, American citizens going to the border being armed, of course, who wouldn't be armed? You're going to go into essentially what's a war zone. The media doesn't talk about it anymore at all. But in the last 4 years, over 100,000 people, mostly Mexican citizens, have been slaughtered by the drug cartels, including recently, I believe it was 43 students.
Right.
And, you know, there's really so many they've lost track.
Yeah, and you're right. Even locally, we don't hear about it on TV. I mean, in San Diego, it's just like the border doesn't even exist anymore. And before, people would have been up in arms about that. But now, you know, it's also politically incorrect, you know, to talk about anything and to really look at a serious issue.
Right.
I know also...
And yet 80% of the American people are deeply opposed to illegal immigration. They want people treated humanely, but they want the law upheld. And I think that's where Obama just completely destroyed his credibility. And not that he had much, at least certainly not with me, but with a huge number of Democrat voters who are deeply concerned about this issue for different reasons. You have the sort of affluent liberal who is more likely to be Caucasian than anything else, and their concern is for the education of their children. And when they see us giving benefits to people who are coming here illegally, and they know how the system works, if somebody comes here illegally, then they become sort of a special interest group, and that group gets preference. Even though it's not carved out in law, that's the way it in practice that it works, and you can see it right here in California. Just recently, they set up here. The university system is struggling so greatly that they've had to raise tuition on our kids year after year after year after year because they overspend and they give all this money to all the various groups that are unionized on campus. But somehow they discovered some slush fund of money to create an illegal alien-only student center. And so they did it on one campus as a trial. Now they're spreading it to all the campuses.
I think
you're in the country
more
illegally,
more.
You're crazy if you don't go to California.
Right. Absolutely, because you're going to get a driver's license very shortly, because they've even hired 1,000 people to to streamline the process of giving illegal immigrants a
right.
driver's license here in California.
Nobody's even talking about that, but that's a tax. It's a hidden tax on the average California hardworking taxpayer. Why do we need to hire 1,000 more DMV workers just to handle driver's licenses for people who shouldn't get them? But, of course, we have a supermajority of Marxist progressives who pretend to be Democrats who are in absolute control over the state, and whatever they want, they get. And I'll never forget being on the floor of the assembly, one of my last speeches, I just asked a simple question. It was another bill out of about 30 bills that we had seen to grant more and more benefits or carve out an exemption for people who are in the country illegally. And this one completely removed every requirement for proper identification, meaning a Social Security number, for people who are getting a state license to work in a select profession, you know, that requires a license from the state of California.
Right.
And so I said, you know, last year, you know, you guys made it possible to practice law, even though your presence in the country is, you know, in violation of the law. Even though people, you know, can't even be jurors in the courtroom in which they could actually be an officer of the law. I mean, what a mockery. You've given free college tuition to people in the country illegally. You've given them driver's licenses. You've waived impounding of cars. You've changed every rule you can. So what I want to know is the one you're doing here, is your goal just to completely erase the line between legal and illegal immigration? And the woman refused to answer me.
Yeah.
And
she
and then
answered, yes.
In the close, and I told them, I said, when you do this, you're encouraging more and more people to come here illegally, and their blood's going to be on your hands.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, all hell broke loose in the assembly, and they turned off my microphone, started yelling at me. Great. And then the woman closed, and she said, you know, Mr. Donnelly, I'm going to miss you here in the assembly as you go back to private life. And I just want you to know that I pray that someday humanity will actually touch your soul.
Wow. Well, you know, you're not towing the line. You weren't towing the line ever in California. And I know people know that California is a liberal state, you know, unfortunately, but they just don't know how liberal it is and how progressive, you know, liberal it is. And it's becoming more.
Yeah, I reject that. California is not a liberal state. California is under liberal control. California is being oppressed by progressives.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not. The term liberal is misused. Progressive is better, but Marxists, people who want absolute state control, they want to control you and use the government as the tool. That's who's in control of the state. Most people don't want that. That's why when I ran for governor, I had so many Democrats that supported me, because most people are fairly conservative with their personal lives and their money. And they want to have a job, they want to have a safe community, and they want to have opportunity for their kids. And on every one of those metrics, Jerry Brown has made this state worse, and his merry band of Marxist progressives have tried to steal every last dollar that you earn so they can give it to people who will keep them in power, so they can have a cushy job, and so can all their friends who, by the way, happen to be in public sector unions. And public sector unions can legally bribe politicians to pass more and more and more regulations and laws to increase their fiefdom. And that's why government is growing and is probably the fastest growing industry in the state of California. And that's a threat, you know, that's probably that is the greatest threat to our economic future and our success.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, while Brown, this is his last term, hopefully, unless he changes the laws about that. This is his last term, and it's almost scary to believe who is going to be after him, because I think that could be scarier than who we have right now, because it's leaning so far left in, you know, the California system that, you know, one only wonders, you know, who's coming next. So,
well, and the Republican Party, the Republican Party will ensure that we get the farthest left governor that's possible, because the Republican Party likes to assassinate conservatives so that they can run people who really resemble Democrats much more than Republicans. And so far that's been a disastrous losing strategy with Meg Whitman and then with this Neil Kashkari fellow. There was a recent story that came out that he was the lowest vote getter. And that's, you know, that's something they just want to completely ignore. But the bottom line is, if you had a true conservative at the top of the ticket, somebody who could articulate conservatism, not republicanism, but conservatism in a way that people could hear it, that's what Ronald Reagan did. And it crossed party lines. It drew people, you know, to his message. And, of course, they saw him as a threat, but they didn't work hard enough to take him out when he ran for governor, and he eventually became president. So
And with Neil Kashkari, you know, what was so scary about him to people, and the reason I think that people just said, I'm not even going to go out and vote, one, they knew, or they felt anyway, that Jerry Brown had it all wrapped up. But Kashkari even admitted that, you know, he voted for President Obama. I mean, you know, what conservative Republican, and he wasn't, obviously, what conservative Republican votes for Obama in presidential election? And then you want this person to come in and be, you know, governor of California. You might as well, you know, keep Jerry Brown, because at least you know what Jerry Brown, who he is and what he does.
But see, that right there should be something that the Republican establishment listens to and says, hey, wait a minute, we ran the wrong guy. You know, we should have backed somebody more conservative and maybe tried, you know, if we had concerns over the nominee, maybe we should have, you know, tried to work with that person in order to maybe tone them down or something. But instead of declaring war on a large, basically on the conservative base of the party, which is what they did, they demoralized the vote much more so than it would have been. There were and a lot of the down ticket races that were extraordinarily close, hundreds of votes, and sometimes in other cases a couple of thousand votes separated Republicans from victory in races they had no business winning in 100 years. But in that election cycle, they did extraordinarily well because there was this anti-progressive fervor, this anti-Obama, anti-Obamacare, anti-Obamist, what I call Obamnesty, you know, and we didn't get to take advantage of it in California because the vote was depressed by having essentially a Democrat at the top of the ticket pretending to be a Republican.
Right. Now, we have, this half hour is going so fast and we have a few minutes left. I want to kind of get into what your plans are for the future, and kind of, are you going to be in California, and what your plans are for helping California try to get steered back in the right direction?
Well, that's a $64,000 question, and I don't have a definitive answer, but I'll tell you what. Number one, I'm not leaving California. I have no plans to leave California. I love this state, and I made this my home. I chose California to be my home when I was a very young man, back when I still had hair. Drove out here in a VW Bug convertible, you know, with $300 in my pocket. And, you know, 20 years later, had a successful business and a wonderful family. And, you know, I married a California girl. And anyway, this is my home. So, and I do intend to fight for it. I'm not quite sure. I've been looking at a number of options. I've been taking a look at a state Senate seat that I would have to actually move from my current home into another district. Now, part of this district I've represented for 4 years. So that's one option on the table. And I've also been in talks with a couple of stations to have my own radio show, which is showing a little bit of promise. You know, and because I do think we need a voice. We need somebody who is saying what we're thinking. And we need somebody who is putting the message out there with some optimism and some perspective that reflects the common sense of the people. And, you know, I think sometimes when all of your political candidates are only extraordinarily successful people who have made it in life, you lose touch with the people who are trying to make it and who are working really hard. They're what we call the middle class. They're trying
right.
to keep their heads above water, and they play by the rules, and they work paycheck to paycheck and, you know, hope one day to start a business or, you know, send their kids to college or whatever their dreams are, you know, pay off their home and be able to retire. And I think we need to send people like us into the places of power to stand there and fight, you know, and make our voice heard. And if I'm not in there doing it in the legislature, then you'll probably see me doing it on radio or in print.
And that's, you know, that's good, because we do need, you know, you have been the voice of reason in California around a whole, you know, river, ocean, whatever you want to call it, of people who weren't always rational in their thoughts. And so I think that, you know, having you as a voice of reason would be really great for California. I you know, for me, I would like to also see you back in a position in the, you know, the legislature in California to try to, you know, turn them back the right way and trying to get more people who are conservative and who are what, truthfully, like you said, what Californians really want. But whatever way, you know, you choose to go, I know you're going to be successful. So, you know, please.
Well,
please,
I appreciate
keep us
that. And I certainly will do everything I can to, even if I'm not in the legislature, to get individuals elected who understand that the government is the greatest threat to our future, and we need to get the government out of the way. And,
mm-hmm.
you know,
absolutely.
I was helpful in a couple of races in this past cycle, and we got a couple people in against the establishment. and so, you know, there's always hope. One man, one voice can always make a difference. And I think we need to never forget that.
Well, and I do know that you were very successful back in 2010, you know, when you had the Tea Party support and you were running, you won that general election by, I think it was like 57.3% of the vote to the Democrats, 36.8%, you know, and that says a lot. That says that, you know, people are interested in turning the tide. They're just, you know, slow sometimes at doing it, or so busy, or, you know, sometimes they just give up because California is just so inundated with, you know, progressives that a
yeah.
lot of people feel that they just can't do anything, and that's not a good way to look at things.
Well, I believe more and more people are waking up, and with social
mm-hmm.
media, the stranglehold that the establishment and mainstream media have had over, you know, the stories that are told about politics and policies that affect people, I think a lot more truth is getting out, and truth is a very, very dangerous commodity these days,
right.
because it has a tendency to set fire to the people, and well, I guess Reagan called it brush fires of liberty, but basically people spread the truth, and they're able to do it in ways that weren't even available 5 and 10 and 20 years ago.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we've had to become the media. And so, you know, the mainstream media isn't working in our favor anymore, and it's up to all of us to, you know, to continue to speak out and do what we can for California, for the nation, and everybody in general. And you know, Tim, I want to thank you so much for coming on tonight. Hopefully we can have you back on sometime when you're you know, knowing which path you want to take, or just because you want to come back on, because this has certainly been a great half hour, and so appreciate everything that you've done for California and that you continue to do. And, you know, thank you again so much for coming on.
Well, thank you for inviting me on, Susan. I enjoyed our talk, and I look forward to talking with you again in the future.
All right. Well, you take care.
Godspeed.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Okay, next we have... we have Tamara Colbert, who is stepping in tonight for Mark. I understand that there's been unforeseen circumstances for Mark. So I know Tamara's on the line, and we were to have Mark Meckler. I just want to tell you a little bit about Mark and who he is before I bring Tamara on. Mark is the president of Citizens for Self-Governance. He's a co-founder and was the national coordinator of the Tea Party Patriots, and he's appeared on many, TV stations, MSNBC, ABC, NBC, and on. He's co-author of Tea Party Patriots, The Second Amendment Revolution. He writes a lot for Breitbart, American Spectator, and their website is at selfgovern.com. And so I'm going to bring on Tamara. How are you, Tamara?
Hi, Susan. Thank you so much for your understanding. Mark's very regretful he couldn't make it, but his son just got a call from his recruitment officer at the United States Marine Corps Depot in Sacramento and said, "You've got 45 minutes to be here. You're on your way."
Whoa.
And they are having their last family supper before they ship their son out. So thank you for having me instead of Mark. I will promise to do my best to be a good second replacement for him. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Tamara, I'm just glad that you could be with us. Can you tell me a little bit and tell our audience a little bit about your background and how you're connected?
Well, I guess I'm a little bit of a rabble-rouser. I'm also a Tea Party leader and got started with Mark in California back in 2009, and I was the co-founder of the Pasadena Patriots, which is now TPAC.net. So I've been right there in the mix since February 28, 2009, after hearing Rick Santelli's rant. And I think most importantly, I realized the fragility of liberty on the night that Barack Obama was elected president. And my husband and I looked over the bed of our sleeping, soon-to-be two-year-old twins, and we looked at each other with tears in our eyes and said, "Oh, my goodness, liberty is truly one generation away from extinction." We knew in our hearts what Barack Obama was planning to do to our nation. And the rest is history. I look to my great-grandfather, Captain Miles Standish, and what he did for liberty and his thirst for freedom. And I have big shoes to fill, and I'm doing the best I can to fill those.
Well, and it sounds like you're doing a really good job at it. So I want to ask you specifically,
sure,
too. A lot of people, I have heard of the Convention of States, and a lot of people have their own opinions about it. And
sure,
I want to kind of, break it down, if I can, to, in the first place, what is the problem? Why do we need a Convention of States?
Well, have you seen this weekend? I'll use it as a perfect example, the great Republican cave-in. Thank you, Speaker Boehner, who has been working with Senator Harry Reid and Obama since this summer to orchestrate this cave-in for President Obama. So even with a historic win in November, another historic win for Republicans, what's happened to Washington, D.C. is that both Republicans and Democrats who have been in the system so long, they're only thinking of themselves. And it's time now, and the Convention of States has the solution. This is our opportunity for average Americans to step up and reclaim self-governance through Article 5, this beautiful section in our Constitution that George Mason fought so diligently to get included, which allows the states to propose amendments. And so Mark Meckler and Michael Ferris, who's the founder of Homeschool Legal Defense Association, got together about a year and a half ago, and they said, "We have got to do this. This is the answer." And they started looking into it and started coordinating efforts. Unbeknownst to them, Mark Levin was also finishing his book on the Liberty Amendments. So they ended up kind of realizing what they all three were separately working on. What's happened is you have a way through our Constitution that can allow the citizens through our states to reclaim self-governance and stop the madness in Washington, D.C.
And so that the Article 5, basically, it restricts the jurisdiction of the federal government and just gives it back to the states and says, states, we want you to decide for your state what you want, instead of us government like Obama does telling you what it is that you have to do. Is that more or less what Article 5 does?
Absolutely. You know, here's the beautiful thing is if you study history and you look at what our founding fathers wrote through their letters, through the Federalist Papers, there was never, ever any intent for the federal government to grow to this size. And in fact, what George Mason was adamant about, including that Article 5, Section 2, so that the states had recourse, because he knew, he said, wait a second, we're giving this government by, of, and for the people, but yet we are not giving the people any recourse for that moment, not if, but when the federal government becomes too large and oversteps its bounds. And it was passed, voted on, passed unanimously. In the Continental Congress, they said, yes, we will accept that. And what's interesting, when it gets to 1791, again, ratified, 100% ratified. And what we see today is we have got to get back. The only way America can work is to get back through true state sovereignty, and that the states need to have a bigger authority and a bigger solution than the federal government, who, through our Constitution, has very limited and specifically defined powers. And our founding fathers wanted the states to have general and broad powers to grow the states and the citizens, that allowed the citizens of those states to grow and learn and create and innovate as much or as little as they wanted to. And it is time right now for the people to recognize this is our opportunity. And I truly believe, as I know my fellow Convention of States folks believe, that the states are going to save the American Republic.
Now, for this to take effect, you need, 38 states to amend the Constitution?
Well, we actually need 34 states, two-thirds of the states, to get to call a convention. And Article 5, it's very specific. So what we are helping, we have organizations in 43 of 50 states right now. Three states have passed their Article 5 application, and that is Alaska, Florida, and Georgia. We have 29 states poised in 2015 to take it to the 34, or two-thirds of the states, that must submit the similar Article 5 application under the same thing. And really what we're proposing is an Article 5 application to limit, to rein in the power, size, and scope of the federal government. And that's what we're on track with, the goal to reach the 34 number before the end of 2015. And we just may do it.
Wow. That would be amazing.
It would be amazing, yes.
And we must do it. I mean, because, you know, every day, like you said, we look at TV and say, whoa, you know, I thought when we got the Republicans in the majority, things were going to be okay. Things were going to turn around. We're going to get them to listen to the American people. And, you know, so far, obviously, they're not doing that. And so this seems like a really good alternative to try to, you know, get the power back where it was always intended to be, and that's with the people and the states, and not the federal government.
I want to add one caveat, and that is that there are naysayers. People are afraid of this. This has never been done before. It's never been done. But, you know, don't you think we are in a very fragile position as a nation, that our elected leaders, they do not care about the average American person? John Boehner, under his watch as Speaker, our economy's debt grew to $4 trillion. That is $32,938.38 for every single household in America, including those on federal welfare benefits.
We are at the point.
Yes.
We're at the breaking point. I mean, we truly are. And people every day ask the question, what can we do now? You know, it's I've never seen a time where people every day ask, how can we survive against our own government? Really, that's what they're asking.
Absolutely.
I mean, they're not saying it that way, but But that's exactly what the question is. And I do hear, you know, some people who say, gosh, you know, I don't want to amend the Constitution. I don't want to do this. I don't want to do that. And, you know, some people call for what's called the Madison Amendment. Now, can you speak to that about why that's not a good thing to do?
Well, I'm not really – I'm so engaged as a media relations director for Convention of States that, you know,
right.
I'm not spending a lot of time on the Madison Amendment. But what I do want to mm-hmm. say, I want to respond to that, but I want to respond in a kind of a similar fashion. Probably I'll hit what you're looking for. When
mm-hmm.
you look to America, you look to this the people are always right. And what I think needs to happen right now, America needs a miracle. We needed a miracle when George Washington and our founders said, we cannot be subjected to King George. We want freedom. We need a miracle right now. And they moved forward on faith. Do you think, here we are coming up soon to be on the anniversary of George Washington's Delaware crossing. Do you not think he had soldiers that had no shoes? They're in a blinding snowstorm. They had to cross the Delaware River with practically icebergs in it, with people with no shoes and very little clothing on Christmas Eve night. And
yep.
these men, I think about this, these men had liberty burning in their hearts so bad that they said, I can make it. I will do it. This is for my posterity. I believe. And a miracle happened. Oh, my goodness. When you think about what risk Lincoln took, he's like, I need a miracle to happen to break the bondage of slavery from both sides. And it happened. World War II. The Japanese sneak attack on Pearl Harbor. How could we take on the German machine and the Japanese simultaneously? We needed a miracle, and it happened. America is the nation built on miracles, and I believe.
Absolutely.
I believe that this is our next opportunity for the people to galvanize together in truth, but in law. Under our Constitution, and to be able to say, Article 5, George Mason knew. He knew this was our time and we would need it. And we need, as a nation, we need to band together and say, you know what, this is scary. But instead of letting fear drive us to the destruction of America, we need to say, you know what, we believe. We believe in each other. We believe in the Constitution. We believe what we stand for. And it's time right now to believe and stand together and say, yes, we're going to do this, not just for ourselves, but for our posterity. And I know we can do this because there are thousands of common sense legislators around this nation in every state who believe in America, who believe in the rule of law, and want citizens to be elevated to their rightful position as the decision makers in America.
Well, and absolutely, and you make a great point. You know, this is the United States Constitution that every day we watch being eroded by this president as he changes laws in every way that he can. And we are, you know, a predominantly Christian nation, whether people want to say that or not. I know the president doesn't agree with that. But
yeah.
that's the truth. That's what that's who we are, and that's why miracles happen. And that's why miracles happened back with George Washington, because he knew, you know, who his maker was. And I wanted to respond a little bit about it when I asked you about the Madison Amendment. I did a little research, and I want to tell the listening audience why
sure.
that won't work and why we need a convention.
Sure.
States. Basically, with that Madison Amendment, the argument is, well, let's just ask the Congress to amend the Constitution. With the, you know, the states will make their proposal, and the states will come forward and ask the Congress to make that that amendment. And you need 2/3 of the states to pass the identical legislation, and then it'll come back to the states for ratification. Well, first of all, as we all know, we have a government that is out of control and overreaching. There is no way that Congress is going to allow the states to pass a law, you know, and make it easier for the states to pass an amendment. It's not going to happen. Congress.
Well, and technically, that's not constitutional.
Exactly.
What you just mentioned right now with the Madison Amendment, that's
right.
not constitutional. And I think what's really interesting, statistics are a beautiful thing. Did you know that there have been more than 11,500 amendments proposed since our Constitution was ratified? 11,000.
Wow.
That's a lot. Only 37 have ever made it through at least one house. And out of those 37, we have the 27 that we have. That's a really profound statistic when you think about the fact that what it means is it's hard to get an amendment passed. So many things have to come together, right? And so can you imagine if we don't even try? And the Constitution right now, let's be clear, I want your listeners to understand, we are not living under the Constitution that is housed in the Library of Congress. We are not living under the Constitution that our founding fathers and framers of the Constitution ratified. We're not.
Right.
We are living under a second Constitution, the one that the legislators, the Supreme Court, and the current President of the United States are living under. And through all this legislation, through all the executive orders, and not just with Barack Obama, but the executive orders, George W. Bush. And you can look at that. What has happened is that is set precedent. And so people are pushing that. And I have to be honest, Barack Obama, why should he stop? Why should he stop? There is no one standing up to him and saying, you are wrong. You are unconstitutional. We have no one standing up to him. So, of course, he said in his inaugural address that he is going to fundamentally transform America, and he's doing it without anyone stopping him.
Right. And I, you know, it's the very reason why the Constitution calls for checks and balances. You know, it's supposed to be the Congress who steps up and says, you don't have the right to make law, Mr. President, and they put a stop to it. But because we're all so politically correct at this time, we're not going to do that. I love Trey Gowdy, but I was disappointed when somebody mentioned that to him in regards to impeaching the president or, you know, what should they do. And his response was, well, you know, have you seen Joe Biden? And while I understand that completely, we're setting a precedent for the next president, if we have one, right?
Yes.
The next president that comes along, we're setting the stage for that president to do exactly the same thing or maybe even worse. So what are we going to do? We're going to let this president get away with it just because we don't like Joe Biden? Something needs to be done. Congress needs to step up. And when they don't, the Convention of States project comes along. And I honestly, I feel that this may be our last hope.
Susan, I'll tell you what. With every day and every new news cycle, I'm sure you are seeing this too because you get to produce and host your own radio show. But you see every day it's something almost more outrageous, just like what's happening this weekend. The perfect example is over the weekend. Can you believe this? That Speaker John Boehner helped Mitch McConnell. They went against Ted Cruz and Mike Lee, who merely wanted to slow this down and say, hey, wait a second. On November 4th, there was a huge referendum against what the Democrats and Obama have been shoving down the American people's throat. We should at least put the brakes on until the newbies want to come into the Senate, the new folks come into the House. Let's let them be part of this decision because the people want them in here. And what does Senator McConnell do? He leads 20 senators against Ted Cruz and Mike Lee and sides with the Democrats. That's not leadership. That's wimpiness. And I'm going to say that. I don't care. We need men and women of courage, men and women of conviction that make their decisions based on their constituents, what their constituents are requesting, and the constitutionality of what they're proposing. Our government is so, so out of control. And I think you're right. I know that the Convention of States project is the way for ordinary Americans to get back on the path and lead the rest of America back onto the path for liberty and freedom and putting the power back in their own hands. I really believe it.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think what's happened in our government right now is we have people who claim to be Republicans. They're nothing more than Democrats. You know, I mean, they really are the progressives, just like
yeah.
the progressive Democrats. They're the same people. They're one and the same. They're in different clothing, but they're one and the same. And you know, you're looking at the junior senators, you know, they're trying their best. We really do need to stand behind them because they are going to bat for us. I mean, they, you know, Ted Cruz is trying everything that he can. But when you have all these rhinos who are in there and setting their own rules about how things should be done and not listening to the American public, which is exactly what they're doing, you know, we have to turn it around. We have to get them back to saying, oh, wait a minute, you know, I guess I do work for those people because now now they're doing something like the Convention of States and they're going to get us back in line and, you know, they're not going to like it, and I say good for that because I'm for one, I'm tired of it. I'm tired of seeing a runaway government that doesn't listen to the will of the people.
Well, you know, what's really interesting, what we've been seeing since 2010 really is a factionalism within the Republican mm-hmm. Party itself, right? Because what we are really seeing since Obama took office is suddenly this old guard Republican rhino kind of big government, old school Republicans. They are lockstep and right with Harry Reid, right with the big
yep.
government Democrats, and in fact have no interest in repealing Obamacare, of which, by the way, all of them campaigned on, especially this year. The first thing I'm going to do, Mitch McConnell says in his ads, I'm going to repeal Obamacare. He has
uh-huh.
no interest in repealing Obamacare. He has
yeah.
no interest in shrinking the size of government. And Speaker Boehner doesn't either, because why is that? Because he raises tons of money, and he has got special interests, in particular the Chamber of Commerce, who want cheap labor.
Right.
So, yeah, let's pass this. We'll get cheap labor. Woohoo! Well, what happens to American workers? What
right.
happens
well,
to American workers?
Obviously, that's not too big of an issue, you know, with illegal immigration. I think the American worker is going to be having to go down to Mexico and trying to find the work down there or other countries because, you know, there are going to be jobs that are just taken away. And, you know, it's not only – we're not talking about, you know, simple jobs. We're putting illegal immigrants through law school, and we just heard from, you know, Tim Donnelly in California
yes.
basically getting a free ride. So, you know, I mean, I guess the American public didn't want jobs that were, you know, college students took. So I don't – we have to do something to get this back under control. And I've been very disappointed in Rand Paul, who basically endorsed Mitch McConnell, you know,
yeah.
In this last election. And he sort of stands with one foot over here with the junior senators, you know, and one foot over here with the rhinos. And he's right down the middle. And you know, we don't need somebody who's right down the middle. I know people love him, and there are things about what he does that I really like. But we don't need somebody down the middle anymore. We need somebody that takes our values, conservative values, and gets out there and does what the American people want them to do, period.
Well, absolutely. You're 100% right. And this is why Article 5 is so important. And I try to tell people that Article 5 might be a very small provision in the Constitution, but it's very mighty in what
yeah,
it means and its intent. It's a giant of a small provision, if you will, because
mm-hmm.
what it means is that this is the answer that the American people literally have the power to remove the EPA, to get rid of Common Core once and for all, to put term limits on those on Capitol Hill. Oh, my goodness, can you imagine? I read a statistic, and I don't know if it was CNS News or one of our big conservative news online sources said that if we put term limits, that 90% of the folks on Capitol Hill would have to be gone. Think about that makes me giddy and excited about new, bright, fresh faces that aren't hell-bent on stealing your liberty and literally putting everything every day into thinking about how they can gain power and trample on the people.
Right.
You know, it's unbelievable.
Well, and also people who want to stay in 30, 40 years, whatever the case may be, in order to line their pockets and not do what they're sent there to do in the first place. That's what we have
and
to
you
get
know,
rid of.
You're absolutely right, Susan. Our founding fathers never intended for those in the federal government to be permanent federal government employees as senators or congressmen. Their intent was they wanted this to be considered a service. This was your duty. And this is why Article 5 is so important, because it uses the word shall three times. And why that's important is that the word shall really is meant for emphasis. And I want to say this to any state legislators listening to this. This is your time. You have sworn an oath to protect your citizens in your state, to uphold the Constitution both in your state and federally. It is your duty as a state legislator to protect your citizens from the federal government. And the beautiful thing about Article 5 is that it empowers state legislators to say, hold on, Washington, D.C., you answer to us. And that is really that essential check and balance that is really lacking today. Because the Supreme Court, they're not making smart decisions based on constitutional fairness. Otherwise, we wouldn't have had Obamacare being shoved down our throat.
Right.
So,
absolutely.
You know, Susan, Article 5 is this wonderful mechanism. And I will tell your listeners, please go to conventionofstates.com. Don't just take my word for it. This is how we got into this mess, believing that what our legislators on Capitol Hill were telling us is true. I want you to go and read for yourself. Look at what's out there. Pick up your Constitution. Look at Article 5, Section 1, and Section 2. Read them together and talk and research. Read the Federalist Papers. I think it's Federalist 41 and 45 and 85. These are so important, and they detail everything that our founders were thinking and why our Constitution is so important. And please, if there's anything that I could ask you to do during Christmas vacation, read the Constitution and read Article 5 and go to conventionofstates.com. We would love to have you join us in this fight. This is your fight, ladies and gentlemen. You, the most important listener, this is your fight, and you get to have it, thanks to George Mason and the rest of our framers.
Absolutely. And they can also go there and donate, correct, at that website?
Well, they can absolutely donate, but you know what we need probably more so than donations? We need people to call and write their legislators, and we've got a petition drive going on right now. And if you go and sign up, you can sign a petition. And that petition, once you put in your address, and you won't get crazy mail or, you know, marketing paraphernalia for it from us, if you go and sign that petition, it goes directly to your state senator and your state House representative, telling them, I support an Article 5 convention of the states to rein in the power of the federal government. That's what's vital. And we need that now more than anything, because we are poised with 29 states ready to move forward with their applications. It's amazing, Susan. Again, it's inspiring, because we only could get that way because of what our citizens in some key states are doing right now. It's really exciting, super exciting. And I want everybody to be part of making a real difference. A real difference.
Well, I hope that they will. And I want to thank you tonight for standing in for Mark. Please tell Mark that we're so proud of his son and serving our country. And I really would like to have you and Mark back on as we get closer and as new things come up. So please do come back. And again, thank you so much for joining us, Tamara.
Thank you so much, Susan. Much appreciated.
You take care.
You too.
So you heard it. we need to get out there. We need to do our part. Take a look at the Convention of States. See if that's something that you agree with. I think it is probably one of our last hopes. Until next week, I will see you back on Monday the 22nd. Take care and God bless.